You're listening to the Next Wave Radio Network.
Yeah, he
That's
certainly...
That's where it's the pinnacle for me. Even Beverly Hills Cop 2 was pretty good.
Yeah, I think you're right, because everything else came before. Trading Places,
Trading Places was great. 48 Hours was great.
But that was all pre...
Coming to America.
Coming to America, and then it was Golden Child that came after Beverly Hills Cop, right?
God, yeah.
Yeah, I think you might be right.
Golden Child was the beginning of the end.
That was the beginning of
the end. And if you're curious about the Golden Child, you can always listen to our podcast about it.
Yeah.
Just go to YouTube and check out the Editing Bay and look up the Golden Child. We are the Editing Bay on the Next Wave Radio Network. My name's Joe.
And mine's Joel.
And this is where we come to talk about movies. We talk about bad movies. We talk about movies that may be underappreciated, misunderstood. Whatever they are, we will go and take a look at them, and then we will bring our opinions here to you.
Always.
So we can discuss them. And this week, we punished ourselves in a very special way.
And we really didn't have to, because
no.
we're coming at this a couple of weeks late.
Yeah, yes.
We could have just skipped it.
I felt that we, as a show, have a responsibility to our viewers, our listeners, our aural viewers.
There you go.
If you're blind,
and you're listening,
this would
to
be
us.
How you would view us anyway. Yeah.
What about if they can't hear?
I'm
and
trying
they,
to dig
they
myself
to
out
us
of this ditch
by watching like a waveform.
If you listen by Braille, then no. So we took a look at this horrible. I'm not going to bury the lead at all here. This horrible film that the only way I could describe it is somebody watched a comic relief. And was like,
yeah.
We really need to put these two in a movie together.
I think that's exactly what it was.
And we got Robin Williams and Billy Crystal in a movie called Father's Day, directed by Ivan Reitman.
What the hell? Yeah, you know what? And we were just talking about Eddie Murphy and some of
his decline.
The decline of Eddie Murphy and when it started. And what did we say? Beverly Hills Cop. Probably,
Beverly Hills
right?
Cop was pretty much
Which
it.
Which seems like a long time ago.
Uh-huh.
But really, when you look at it, he might be onto something. The same could be said for Ivan Reitman.
He hasn't had a hit since Dave.
No.
1993 or 4,
and
I think
is
when that came
out. I think
out.
You're being kind by calling Dave a hit.
Dave really. Was pretty good.
Dave was pretty
good movie.
But was it a box office success?
I think it may have been.
Yeah?
Yeah.
People like Kevin Kline?
I remember it being pretty huge. It was a pretty huge release. What was it before that? Was it like Kindergarten Cop or something?
Yeah, it must have been. Or Junior or Twins.
Junior was not a hit.
Twins was a hit.
Twins was huge.
Junior was not.
Junior was not. And now he's working on Triplets.
You're kidding.
No. I saw that when I was going through IMDb and researching all this
Oh,
stuff.
No.
Yeah. He's working on another one of these movies.
Ivan Reitman.
Yeah. It looks like his son has taken up the mantle of the talented director. And even that is arguable at this point.
I think you're right.
I feel like Jason Reitman's had a couple of good movies. I love Thank You for Smoking. That movie's fucking phenomenal.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
And Up in the Air is really good.
Was that his first one, Thank You for Smoking?
I think Thank You for Smoking was his first feature.
Yeah, and he really came out of the gate.
Yeah, he did.
Engines rearing.
But then, you know, it was kind of a slump, and then, you know, he had Juno. I'm not a really big Juno fan.
You know, I remember loving Juno at the time, saw it in theaters, and I'm like, oh, what a fresh voice this is, how quirky. But it
doesn't
hold
stand
up.
No, it does not hold up. Up in the Air I really liked.
Yeah, this is a strong movie.
But I can't remember. He's done something since then. I can't remember.
Well, he just did. It's funny you should say that, Joe. I forgot. I was going to call you Jeff there for a second.
No, my name is yours. Just take away the L.
Jeff, it's funny you should not say anything. But Joe, it's funny you should say that, because the latest movie he did was called Labor Day.
And oh, that's right.
The one with Titanic Girl.
And Josh Brolin.
And Josh Brolin, exactly.
Who is just announced to be the new...
Thanos.
What's his name? Thanos from the Avengers, yeah.
Wow, how the fuck did I pull that out of my
I don't
ass?
Know, man. That was really good. I was very impressed. So, yeah. And that movie had no, it really had no pub. It didn't get a huge reaction. What was the story behind that? That he played an escaped prisoner.
I'm hearing it was kind of mismarketed.
Uh huh.
They marketed it like as a love story, and really it's more. It sounds a lot like Mud, actually, the McConaughey movie. From
my
a couple
name
of
is
summers
Mud.
Ago. Same story. He's like a I don't know. He doesn't kidnap them, but he holds them for.
They,
what do you
they,
call it when like you go into somebody's house and you It's not kidnapping.
He just squats in their house.
I guess so, but he won't let them leave.
He won't let them leave, and then eventually there's like some Stockholm syndrome. And
exactly.
Yeah, the kid likes having a father figure, and she likes having a husband around again. And
there you go, yeah. So I think there's probably a deeper message there, but they tried to sell it as like a rom-com, and that didn't fly very well. But yeah, you're right, not a box office success.
It's the curse of the Reitmans. Like, you've got some really good ones.
The curse of the Reitmans,
then,
but also
slumps.
The curse of the Reitmans when they try to co-opt a holiday. So his Labor Day didn't pan out.
Just like his dad's Father's Day.
Exactly.
Did not pan out. So the story of this movie, it starts off with, and I don't think I'm exaggerating, it's like an 8-minute opening title sequence.
Oh, yeah.
To this song by Paul McCartney called Young Boy that I kind of hate.
Were you familiar with it before?
I was not. No, because that song came out that year. That was a new release by Paul McCartney and Steve Miller.
Right, but this movie came out like 1997.
97, so, yeah. And that's the same year that song came out.
But I'm saying in the last 7 years.
Oh, no.
You've never heard that.
No, you've never heard that tune.
Yeah, me neither.
And yeah, it opens up to this title sequence, and it's basically watching this kid growing up and some early photos of Bruce Greenwood, who kind of plays this kid's father.
Yeah. How do we know Bruce Greenwood?
Bruce Greenwood, you would know from 13 Days. He played Kennedy.
Oh, that's right.
13 Days.
Oh, that's a fantastic film.
He was also the voice of Batman in Under the Red Hood.
Ooh, that's
he's a fantastic Batman voice actor.
Oh,
he's
I didn't
really
realize
good.
That.
Oh, yeah. No, he's really good.
I know him more recently from the Star Trek reboots where he played the
Pike.
Guy who... Yeah, Captain Pike.
Uh-huh.
Captain Pike.
So, yeah, he plays this kid... Well, he plays this kid's father.
Father.
Right now, quote unquote.
Yeah.
And so we see in this like really awkward like black and white flashback sequence that happens at the end of the title sequence that his son like hops on the back of a motorcycle being driven by a blonde, which immediately makes you go, oh yeah, this is a real
who's wearing the pants in this relationship.
A real tough kid. Uh-huh. He jumps on the back of this motorcycle and they drive off.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, immediately, we've spent 8 minutes building up who this kid is, like, his family life.
Right.
And then immediately open up on Billy Crystal in a courtroom.
Yep.
Like, after a case. We've spent no time building up who he is.
No context.
It just kind of just drops you in the middle of this, which already is off on the wrong foot.
Listen, I'm fine with that if it's done skillfully, and if there's... I'm willing to go along with a film if it's going to take me on a journey.
I'm not okay with that, especially when it's advertised and billed as like a goofy comedy, a buddy road trip comedy.
Hell yes.
You need to build up your character. You need to waste no time with, we didn't need to see all this stuff of the kid growing up.
Yeah.
It would have been more effective if we would have learned about the kid through Billy Crystal and Robin Williams instead of seeing all this backstory to someone we don't even meet until like 40 minutes into the movie.
True, but admittedly, how do you do that when neither of these main characters know the kid growing up?
You just start with Billy Crystal and you find out about the kind of life that he's living, how he's on his third wife, and he hasn't had kids yet because he's been busy and he just wants it to be the right time. You know, and we don't even have to play on the Julia Louis-Dreyfus thing, who plays his wife, where she actually wants kids. Of the things that this movie did right, I kind of dug that reveal later in the movie that she was like, well, I really want to have kids with you. But you build up that he's really, you know, into his job, into his career. He's building his life. Doesn't have time for kids.
Mm-hmm.
Then is approached by this woman who's like, hey, you have a son. And he's out there somewhere and he's missing. Oh, my God. I need to go find him. I should probably go find him.
That's a good point. Instead of starting with the tertiary characters.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. I'm with you.
So, but that's what happens. This kid runs away, and Natasha Kinski plays who you might know from The Cat People or Charlie Sheen's Terminal Velocity.
So you don't know her,
what we're saying. You might not know who
You've
Natasha
Kinski
is.
Never heard of Natasha Kinski.
She's this kid's mom, and she visits Billy Crystal and is like, hey, you know, he's like, how long has it been? She's like, 17 years.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually drops on him like, hey, my son's gone missing, and he's yours. How do you know? I know. I know that he's
yours. I've done the math.
I've done the math. And he's like, well, why don't we get a test? I would love to, but he's missing. And so he even says, like, I don't find kids. I'm sorry. I can't help you out. And so then we cut to, like, Robin Williams, who's a writer.
Wow.
A tortured writer type who's in the...
The intro scene where he's introduced, we cut to him, and he's got a gun in his mouth.
He's setting his work on fire.
Yep.
And with his hairy hands, is like lighting a match and like sets all his stuff on fire. And
you could never find a body double, by the way, for Robin Williams.
No.
Like there's nobody hairy
enough. It would have to be someone wearing a Chewbacca costume.
Exactly. Peter Mayhew is the body double for.
And so then he takes a gun and he's putting it in his mouth. And the note that I wrote was like, Because I guess suicide is funny.
Yeah, what a real fucking doubter at the beginning of your comedy.
This, I mean, you could have had something. You could have gone the route of like the movie Better Off Dead, where he, you know,
good call.
He's trying to kill himself in like ridiculous ways, and it ends up, you know, it doesn't work out, and it's funny. A gun in your mouth, just that visual. There's no way you
it's
can't.
Not cool.
It's not funny. It's,
can you imagine
it's terrorizing.
Like families who on Father's Day weekend, 1997, whenever this came out, you know, oh hey, what do you want to do, Dad, for your Father's? Let's go to the movies. What's
going on?
See
that goofy movie Father's Day.
Because this probably came out Father's Day weekend.
Oh,
right?
I'm
you
sure
can only
did.
Imagine.
I'm sure it
you
did.
Don't release a movie called Father's Day.
Well, then again,
on Labor Day,
Jeff and I thought that Ivan Reitman would have the decency to release a movie called Draft Day around the same time as the NFL draft, and he fucked that up too.
Missed it by that was by him too.
It was Ivan Reitman. Yeah.
All right, no more making movies with the word day in it. For you, but yeah, like a family just going into theater. And, hey, we're gonna have a fun time. It's got Billy Crystal, got your guys,
and Goofy Robin Williams. You know when they do comic relief, they're so wacky.
Everybody
then
loves
him with Whoopi Goldberg. Yeah. You
and
know,
immediately we have like
Mrs. Doubtfire. Remember Mrs. Doubtfire? Oh, it's gonna be so hilarious. And then 10 minutes in, you've got a gun to his head.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's terrifying,
disturbing.
And so he gets a call just as he's about, and he's. He, you know, I don't know if this was an improv from him or if it was direction,
yes.
It was written, where he's like, two bullets should do the job, where he puts two bullets in the gun. And then the phone rings, and it's Natasha Kinski.
Yep.
And then she meets with him and tells him the same exact story.
Right.
This is your son. He's gone missing. And he's totally into it.
Yeah.
He's like, oh my gosh, my son needs me.
Finally, his life has meaning now. It's about to end, and now
right.
There's a turnaround on the horizon.
And so he goes on this, you know, on this trek as well to go find his son. Billy Crystal's stuck in San Francisco.
That's right.
He's on a business trip. And so he decides, well, if I'm stuck here overnight, I may as well look into this thing. So he goes to this tow truck company where his son was last seen.
Well, it's the girlfriend's
father
uh-huh. works there. So
yes.
They're following the breadcrumb.
And he goes in, and the dude is like unreasonably like defiant
yeah.
and just abrasive
well,
for no reason.
It's the like the lowest form of filmmaking where we have to make the audience immediately hate this character. So what do? Oh, he's just going to yell at people and he's going to punch things and throw things around.
But was it to make us hate this character as quickly as possible, or was it to seriously Chekhov's gun the headbutt?
Oh, well, yeah, that headbutt comes into play.
A lot.
Yeah, I guess so. No, you're right. Yeah, that's the only reason he's such an ass.
There's no reason other than because he never comes back.
He doesn't come back. We also have to set up that his offspring is the troublemaker, taken off.
The rebellious type.
Where daddy left off, yeah. So you could see why she's such a...
I don't think we needed either this character or... Because then they end up going to visit the mom.
Right.
And they're split up.
Yeah.
And the mom's working on like a harbor and she's selling bait and stuff.
Yeah.
We didn't need both of these characters.
No.
We only needed one. You could have done the same job with just one of these characters and moved on with the story a lot quicker.
Yeah, but I guess if you have to, you're trying to introduce, how do you get Billy Crystal and Robin Williams, who are now on the same path trying to track down the same guy, if they jump right to the mother, then where do they go from there?
Why even go to the mother?
Well, let's back up. Why even do this at all? Where's the fucking, like the real father, the guy who thinks he sired this child? Why hasn't he explored this avenue?
And you know what the thing is? They do explain. He's like, I thought that he would just come back.
After 2 weeks?
Here's the thing.
Okay.
I'm with you on this, on the after 2 weeks. Like, what the fuck, man? Why are you not going after your son? Why are you not looking for your son?
Where have
the
cops been called after 24 hours?
These are all questions I've written down.
Okay.
However, I am going to throw this down right now, and you may disagree with me. I feel like Bruce Greenwood is the most sympathetic character in this entire film.
He is, but he's not supposed to be.
And he's no.
This movie treats him like he's the father of the girlfriend.
Right.
Like he's the villain.
Exactly. Which we will explore in just a bit.
Okay.
So Robin Williams and Billy Crystal realize, because they think they're looking for two separate sons,
mm-hmm.
they realize they're looking for the same kid.
Yeah.
They realize that Natasha Kinski's kind of up to no good.
Yeah.
And she still tells them, she's like, well, I don't know who the father is. We'll just figure it out when you guys get back. So they go on this trek across the, you know, along the West Coast trying to find their kid who's just traveling around following the band Sugar Ray.
Oh, no.
Remember Sugar Ray?
I knew the minute, anytime a movie like calls out a specific band by name, you know, this is going to be a major plot point. We're going to see a lot of this band, fill in the blank band throughout this movie. So the minute, was it the father or the mother that spilled the beans?
It's the mother. The mother was like, hey, they're with Sugar Ray, and Billy Crystal goes, the boxer? Which was kind of funny line.
Yeah, one left.
She's like, no, it's a band. They're playing, they were here last night. They're going to be playing Tempest Club in Sacramento tomorrow night. Mm-hmm. And so they're like, all right, well, we're on our way. Tempest, Sacramento, we're on our way. And yeah, we go into the Tempest Club or a Temple Club, and there's fucking Sugar Ray playing. And this is back when you may remember, like, you might think of Sugar Ray now and you think of, like, Fly.
Someday,
or you think of songs like Someday. But there was a time when Sugar Ray was really they were a heavy punk band.
Absolutely.
They did songs like Speed Home California, Mean Machine, Tap, Twist, Snap. Those are some of my favorite tunes, and they're really heavy, like, punk-inspired, you know, rock songs.
Yeah, this is kind of eye-opening for me. I didn't realize that was their roots.
Yeah.
I only know their pop top 40 hits.
Right. Well, it wasn't until when Fly hit it big.
Yeah.
And that's when they were like, you know, oh, wait, maybe we should just focus solely on, like,
16-year-old girls.
Yeah, 16-year-old girls and just pop music, and that's all fucking Sugar Ray was after that.
Yeah.
But you get a little bit of a glimpse of punk rock Sugar Ray in this movie. Not saying that this is a good thing. Not saying this is a bad thing. I'm just saying
you might
get to see another side of Mark McGrath.
Yeah. Wearing, like, guy liner.
Oh, my God.
And fishnet shirt.
So the girl that Scott, who's the son, ran away with, you know, we open up on her in this club, and she's sitting there, and he's passed out on a table, like, in a drink. And she decides to get up on stage, and she's making out with Mark McGrath.
Sure, who wouldn't?
Scott wakes up, and he looks, and he sees what's going on. He jumps up on stage. He's like, ugh, pushing them away from each other. He gets thrown out of the club. Robin Williams and Billy Crystal see this.
Yep.
Jack and Dale, if we want to go by character names.
Let's not.
Okay.
No one's going to remember them.
All right. And so they follow him off stage, and the bouncer is trying to keep them from leaving the club.
Yep, here
which
we
is
go.
Something I've never seen before. But they try to he tries to keep them from leaving the club. He's like, it's a private area. He's like, well, maybe it's a semi-private area. He's like, get out of here, old man. Billy Crystal's like, oh, man, what? Headbutts the fucking bouncer because we have to bring that back.
Headbutt number two.
So then they go out into the alleyway. They think they find the son on these steps in the rain. Instead, it's Jason Reitman.
Yeah, cameo.
And then they go back around and, you know, back in the corner, there's Scott. Pick him up, bring him back to the hotel. He's puking, he's sick. And so now they're struggling to get him cleaned up. They're like, you know what, we're going to just keep him here, and the mom will come, you know, we'll get him back home. And meanwhile, Billy Crystal's wife is wondering what the fuck is going on.
Yeah.
Why aren't you home? Who are you with? Why do I hear other voices?
Yeah, there's like it was played for laughs.
Yeah.
But it was supposed to be like an episode of Three's Company where he's like talking on the phone and hearing moans in the background.
I'm glad you said that.
Oh.
I'm glad you said Three's Company.
Thank you.
Because this movie was written by a couple of guys named Lowell Ganz.
Uh-oh.
And Babalu Mendel.
Babalu?
Babalu Mendel.
No way. From the Howard Stern Show?
Are most... Yes, Baba Booey. Babalu Mendel, they're most famous for writing episodes of Happy Days.
You're kidding.
Joni Loves Chachi.
Uh-oh.
Really bad sitcoms. And then, like, one of the writers also wrote a bunch of projects that Billy Crystal was attached to and also wrote, like, Robots that I think Robin Williams was the voice in. Some CG animated movie.
Oh, yeah,
Robots.
I remember that one. Yeah.
So, yeah, they've obviously worked with these guys before, but these guys do not have a whole lot of, like, depth when it comes to writing. So you saying Three's Company is hitting it right on the fucking head.
Yeah, that's what it felt like.
That's exactly what
they... Not in a good way, too.
That's all they know. That's all that these writers know. Had they had some kind of fresh writing team on this, maybe this would have been tolerable. But no, this was disgusting. And so, you know what, to spare you, the listener, from me just trudging through all the minute details of this story... the kid makes his way. He escapes from the hotel while Billy Crystal's gone. He outsmarts Robin Williams, and he runs off. And then it's a chase to find the kid again and bring him back to his parents.
Hilarity ensues,
or not?
Yeah,
you know. In fact, I think I quoted on Facebook that one of the reviewers on the back of the DVD. I ended up having to buy this on DVD.
No, Joe.
Yeah, I couldn't get it downloaded.
Really?
Yeah. So one of the reviewers on the back is like, "Get ready for the mother of all comedy events." And, like, I seriously, I had to watch this movie. I had to start it twice. I got halfway through and I just could not, I couldn't fucking bear it.
But at that point,
I couldn't stand it. So I ended up watching it again today while I was at work.
Oh, no. I'm so sorry.
No. I needed to get through it because
yeah.
we do.
This was fucking your pick, by the way.
Exactly. There's no way I couldn't watch this movie. I couldn't be like, Joel, I'm sorry I didn't watch it. So just like carry me through this thing. This movie's fucking interminable. It's horrible. I felt so robbed of an hour and a half of my life.
Yeah.
And the fact is, an hour and a half, that felt like fucking 3 hours.
Have you ever forgotten a movie more quickly? More quickly? Quicker?
No.
Than this movie.
Because I had to watch it twice.
I watched it, I guess, Sunday night. So here we are, Tuesday, 2 days later. And I was driving here thinking, God, whatever happened to the $5,000? There's a whole subplot that we get into later where the little boy, what's the little boy's name?
Scott.
The son? Scott. Scotty.
Scott!
He, I don't know if that was Austin Powers.
It was,
Scott,
yeah, it was
or
Austin Powers.
Scott Pilgrim, Scott.
Yeah, no, it was. I was going for Austin Powers.
well done. Where he steals $5,000. I guess these drug dealers were presumed.
Yes.
Gives
played
him $5,000.
By Jared Harris, who you might know from the second Sherlock Holmes film, who plays Moriarty.
Or from Mad Men. He was
I've
Pierce.
Never watched Mad Men.
I think that was what his name
yeah,
was.
I
really?
Think, I think you're right. No,
I think you'd dig it.
Yeah, I'm sure I would.
Who loves character. Like, that show is a character study.
Can we, like, can we just take a little sidebar here for
Please,
a second?
Please, let's do it.
About Mad Men. I think I've told you the story before, but at a Dallas Comic-Con, mm-hmm. and this was a long time ago, it was, you know, they had a couple of Firefly guests out there, but one of them was Christina Hendricks.
Oh, love her.
And the guy who ran the show, Mark, found me out in like the hallway. I was just kind of looking around and stuff. He was like, hey, dude, one of my moderators has gone missing. I don't know where he is.
Oh, no way.
And Christina Hendricks is really nervous. She doesn't want to host her own Q&A. So I was wondering if you might be willing to host it for me.
Shut up.
I'll refund your admission. And if you'd be willing to do this, I owe you one, man.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, yeah, sure. Okay, that's fine.
This is post-Firefly, right?
This is post-Firefly. Okay.
Of and course, so, why else would she be there?
And so I go in there and I give, you know, this introduction. I'm like the sexy redhead that you love to hate. Give it up for Saffron herself, Christina Hendricks, and like big applause.
Yeah.
She comes in, she sits down, and she's wearing like this little skirt. And so we're sitting back there behind the table, and my first question, I'm like, all right, so obviously everybody loves you from Firefly, and you know, you play just a wonderful character that, you know, everybody kind of got behind.
Oh, no.
You know, and I think it speaks volumes to your ability as an actress that, you know, you were a character that everybody knew better than to trust, but we still were heartbroken when you would turn on the crew. So what have you been up to lately? She looks at me and she's like, well, I've been doing this little show called Mad Men.
What are we on, like season three?
They just finished season one.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, then you can be forgiven for
but
not knowing.
It was, from what I understand, it was huge. Like, straight from the word go, Mad Men was a huge thing. And like, even some of the people in the audience were like, Mad Men, dude, what the hell? And like the whole time, I was so fucking embarrassed after
well,
that.
Well, yeah.
But.
How are you expecting
We that? Ended up, you know, I ended up turning it around and, you know, we had ourselves a really nice time. But the thing is, and remember, Mark said she's really nervous about doing the Q&A.
Mm-hmm.
When Christina Hendricks is nervous, she fidgets.
Oh, no.
And the way she fidgets is she had her hands down here.
Uh-oh.
And I've got my hands under the
table.
Is this
an R-rated story, George?
A little bit.
Okay.
A little bit.
I'm prepared
so
now.
So she twirls her skirt when she's nervous.
Yeah.
She's twirling it. Well, what happens with fabric as you're twirling it over and over again?
It gets tighter.
It gets tighter. It starts to ride up.
Yeah, it does.
So at one point in my periphery, I notice like her skirt is like, it's like all the way up. Like,
oh my
at
God.
This point, she's twisted it so much, it's all the way up.
Are you sitting at one of these kind of tables where it's open where the audience
no,
can
no,
see
it's
her
not,
legs?
No. It has a cover.
Okay.
The thing is, I can see. But I am doing everything in my fucking power.
Oh,
every bit of fucking willpower I have, I'm telling myself in my head, I'm like, don't look down, don't look down, don't look down, don't look down. And like, so she takes a question from somebody else, and in a split second, she looks out to address somebody. I just go, bam, and then bring it right back up. And that's my story about that.
Wow.
But to quote Patrick Stewart from Extras, I've seen everything. So that's my Christina Hendricks
nice.
Story.
Nice. I hope you have a photographic memory. A little right click save as.
I don't
put that
remember
one in the vault.
Anymore. I don't remember. But I do have a picture still of us at the table together while I'm like asking her questions.
I'm a huge fan of her.
Yeah, she was really sweet. She's really sweet. So yeah. Father's Day.
Oh man!
How the hell
do we have to?
So yeah, no. Jared Harris, you were saying he's from Mad Men.
Yes.
But no, yeah, the $5,000 that he stole from these drug dealers
steals it and buys this chick, his supposed girlfriend, who like was making out with Sugar Ray moments or days before, day before.
A diamond necklace.
Yeah, like
thing.
A $4,700 whatever. We can only presume he pocketed the other $300.
Right. No, well, the other $300 was used.
Oh, did they say that?
Yeah, they said that. They said that Billy Crystal and like Robin Williams had borrowed some of that money.
Okay, so then I probably just missed. Oh, yeah, that sounds familiar. Yeah. I probably just missed it then. So drug dealers are chasing after him, and they want their $5,000 back. That's when they're introduced. And so that kind of leads to the whole third act.
Another
climax.
Thing that's introduced way fucking late in the movie.
Yeah, like, yeah, I'm telling you, it's third
honestly,
act.
Honestly, how about, like I was saying, we could put this information earlier in the flick. You know, they spend so much time in this movie before we even get to the son. Why are we not cutting to him to see like what yeah. he's doing? Why are we catching up with him when Billy Crystal and Robin Williams finally catch up with him when we started the movie with? I would understand if we started the movie straight up with, like
and
I
we,
said, with Billy Crystal,
we experience
and we experienced everything
him.
Through his eyes. Yep. I would get then waiting that long to meet up with Scott. But no, we started the whole movie watching him grow up. We saw the little fight in silent black and white footage. We are allowed now. At this point, we are allowed to cut back and forth to him to see what he's up to.
You know, it almost feels like maybe that's something that was added after the fact, that 8-minute opening sequence you talked about where we introduced the son and the family.
Yeah.
Think, you know, I could totally see some focused test group watching the movie where we do start with Billy Crystal
yeah.
and then complaining, well, we don't get to meet the son until Act 2. Oh, we got to do reshoots.
We've
got to
do
whole.
The man, there is so much going on in this movie where Ivan Reitman expects the viewer to just put the pieces together, and not in a clever way.
No,
it's a very sloppy way. Like Bruce Greenwood, at one point decides, like, "Hey, I'm going to go and try to get my son. I'll go drive out and meet the guys at the hotel, and I'll get my son." And that's all we see. We see him being. There's no point in this movie where we see Bruce Greenwood being a dick. Like, he's never a dick. He's really a nice guy. You know, when she's talking to Billy Crystal on the phone, she's like, "I don't know. We'll figure it all out later." And he says, like, "You don't know who Scott's father is?"
Yeah.
And then, like, they cut on that. And then we come back to them, and he's getting stuff ready, and he's leaving. And she tells him, like, "No, well, you understand now. Like, I lied to them so that way they would go find our son because you weren't going." He's like, "No, I'm sorry. I should have gone and looked for him." Like, he's apologizing.
I know. He's a great guy.
He's a fucking fantastic guy.
And then, not to jump to the end, but even at the end, when he's reunited finally with it. Reunited.
And it feels so good.
Thanks for picking up that hook.
You're welcome.
It's a warm embrace and then invites Robin Williams and Billy Crystal in. You'd think he'd be pissed at these guys who banged his wife 17 years ago. But, you know, brings them into his home and... Yeah, you're right. There's nothing wrong with this guy, and yet he's treated like the buffoon of the movie.
He's comic punished.
Relief. He really
he's
is.
He's punished throughout this whole movie for nothing.
Yeah.
You know, we cut to a car broke down on the side of the road, and it's him changing a tire. We never see him pop a flat.
No.
We just see him changing a tire.
That's fine.
And then the spare is flat as well.
A leak, yeah.
Like, this guy's already being punished in this movie.
Yeah, really
so then he's
got
to throw his tools in the trunk, and he walks off, and you see, like, he's on this mountain fucking highway, and he's got to get to the nearest service station. Looks like it takes him forever. He gets there, tries to go to the bathroom in a porta potty. It gets knocked down a fucking hill.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he's being punished constantly throughout this movie. He is ever a fucking victim of fate, and he shouldn't be. This guy has done nothing wrong. If you're going to do this to a character, you make sure that he deserves it.
I was going to say, you know, we talk a lot of shit about Adam Sandler movies. We did Click a couple of weeks back. An Adam Sandler movie would have gotten that part of it right. He's really good in his movies about really making you hate, like, overboard to the extreme. Like, I'm thinking of Wedding Singer and Bradley Cooper.
Uh-huh.
That guy's just an ass from the beginning. And I think he takes it too far in his movies, and especially in a movie like The Wedding Singer where, you know, what's her name? Drew Barrymore is the heroine.
Yeah.
I lose respect for her immediately because I'm like, why? You're engaged to this asshole?
Right, exactly.
Like, why are you? I don't respect you as a character because you've chosen to, you know, say yes to this
be with
guy.
This guy who's just a transparent
it
cockhole.
Really is, yeah. So it's like, okay, they take it a little too far, but at least you never have any sympathy for that guy. He gets his comeuppance, and you're right there with him.
Yeah.
But this guy, you're right. The only thing we can say is that he waited 2 weeks to finally go find his son and let these absentee fathers do the heavy lifting.
Honestly, I feel like fucking Natasha Kinski needs to be punished in this movie.
Thank you. You want to talk about a villain.
She lies to two people.
And there's no punishment for her.
Emotional fucking terrorism.
Oh, yeah. 17 years later.
It's
your son.
I'm
pretty sure that's illegal.
It's your son. You have to go find him. Please go find him. Oh, I lied so you would go look for my kid. What the fuck? Like, there should be some comeuppance. And you know what? The fact that when he finally comes home, what is this distraught mother doing? She's fucking gardening in the backyard.
That's right.
Like, really? Why couldn't she get in the car and
it's
ride
symbolic.
With Bruce Greenwood? Why couldn't they go together to go get their fucking son?
Yeah.
Questions.
Spring only comes once a year, Joe. You know, you got to plant those tomatoes when the time is right.
I guess so. It's the laziest bit of writing. It's a horrible,
it's
horrible
a bad story
structure.
Yeah.
Just the structure of it is just fucking, it's abysmal.
I want to back up to a scene earlier. We kind of glossed over when Billy Crystal and Robin Williams meet the father of the girlfriend who ran off with
the
kid.
Can I back up even further before we get to that?
Jump in that time machine.
The uselessness.
Fucking Jeff putting his head in his hands.
1.21 gigawatts.
Roads.
The where we're going. We don't need roads.
I love how all I can do, like, I can so easily derail you by starting a phrase from a famous movie.
I have to finish it.
You
it's
do.
My OCD. I'm like
shave
autistic.
And a haircut.
2 bits!
There you go.
So when Natasha Kinski tells Robin Williams, you know, you've got a son, you need to go look for him. He's like, my son needs me. Then we cut to this ridiculous fucking montage of voices where he's wearing outfits.
Thank you.
And he's like, yo, Scotty!
He's doing every impression you've heard from every other Robin Williams movie. He did it in Mrs. Doubtfire when he goes to see the worker.
Uh-huh.
And she's like, what do you do? I do voices. And then the next 90 seconds is him doing all of the same voice.
Yes.
He does the old John Wayne voice. And yeah, like you said, the hip rap star.
He tries to be a hippie. It's such a waste of time. Like it was unoffensive. It's not like
no.
I'm offended by what they did. It just wasn't funny. It wasn't funny. It was basically Robin Williams jerking himself off for about 2 minutes in front of the camera.
It made me wonder if it's in his contract. Like back in the 90s, like every movie he did. All right,
where he just gets to do his own little demo reel.
Bring in the props because I'm going to spend all day getting into outfits and doing funny characters.
Oh my God. I just wanted it to be done.
I hate it.
I got to tell you, like, I probably wouldn't have minded this movie quite so much if it was just Billy Crystal. Mm. I couldn't stand Robin Williams. I thought Robin Williams, just like how we didn't need two parents that for the girl, we didn't need both Robin Williams and Billy Crystal.
That's a good point.
There was nothing really added to having the two of them working together.
Yeah, I guess they were going for every review I read of this movie. Like this is how I watch the movies. I watch the movies and then I get the IMDb page or Rotten Tomatoes up, and I want to see what other people are saying. And everybody said, "Oh, you know, these guys were cast because of their HBO. What was it called? Comic Relief?
Yeah, Comic Relief.
Once a year they do
the charity thing.
They haven't done that in decades.
No,
but it was a big thing there for a while because you couldn't say the F-bomb. You know, HBO was known for, you know, you want to hear some salty language on television. You're going to subscribe. You're not going to hear it on a regular TV.
Well, that was when HBO was really hitting its stride with a bunch of stand-up specials.
Yeah.
In fact, Carlin, every one of his stand-up specials was HBO.
That's right.
And he's kind of the one that kicked that off. And then you would see like the HBO Half Hour Comedy Hour, HBO One Night Stand.
Yeah.
I can't remember if Two Drink Minimum was Comedy Central. I think that was Comedy Central.
That was Comedy Central. Yeah.
But no, they would. I mean, they became huge with on Saturday nights. It was a different stand-up doing different specials. Mm-hmm. Fucking Rodney Dangerfield had like a bunch of stand-up reviews. Like he would have a bunch of young talent. He'd open it up, and that's where he discovered. That's where Roseanne Barr was discovered. One of those stand-up reviews.
Huh. So this movie was cast based on their chemistry. And you would think,
Comic Relief.
These guys have done these comic reliefs for so many years. They're always funny. Them and Whoopi. What could go wrong? Get them in front of a camera. They seem like they have no chemistry.
No.
They seem like they don't like each other off camera. Mm-hmm. Or at least maybe they were in different parts of their life now. Billy Crystal was playing a type of role that he usually doesn't play or get to play.
Billy Crystal was playing the same role he played in City Slickers.
Yeah, but in City Slickers, he was still, like, you know, it was fish out of water, and so he got to
he
joke
was what,
at the
Joel?
Situation.
He was a baseball fan? Because I wasn't quite sure if Billy Crystal was a baseball fan in this movie.
Did he wear a Yankees cap in this one?
They only fucking hit you over the head with baseball
every
with him.
Every movie.
Where he's mentioning Lou Gehrig.
Harry Met Sally.
And they did the fucking telegraphed Lou Gehrig's disease joke in this movie.
Yeah.
Cut to some footage in his house, and there's a fucking rack with a bunch of baseball fucking caps.
Oh, I didn't catch
Where
that.
Did he meet Natasha Kinski? They're sitting there in a diner.
The
he's like,
game.
Where did you meet her? I met her at a baseball game. Get the fuck off of baseball. For God's sake, I love baseball as much as the next baseball fan.
Yeah.
I really do love the game. But I don't need to fucking mention it in every goddamn project.
It shouldn't
that I'm
be
a
your
part
persona,
of.
Right? Your
Jesus.
Wife. Oh, well, those Yankees.
I'm sorry. I'm getting, no, it's getting, okay. Getting a little worked
but
up over there.
I still say, like, he was playing the straight man to Robin Williams's, you know, he was the good cop to Robin Williams. I don't know what you call it, bad cop.
Just crazy.
Unfunny
just,
cop, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe it was a little more Mel Gibson.
He even had the mullet.
he even did the thing where he stuck the gun.
Fucking
in his mouth.
Mel Gibson even shows up in this movie.
What the hell was that?
I don't know.
The weirdest cameo. So we're in the third act. Out of nowhere, they could have shaved 2 minutes off of this movie by taking that scene out. It was unnecessary. They're at a concert, another Sugar Ray concert at the end. What do you think? You suppose Sugar Ray got paid to do this movie?
They probably got paid in fucking coke and hookers.
Yeah, might
they
as well.
Seriously did.
Actually,
my note is, and then Mel Gibson? Like, yeah. That's just a question.
He's
mark.
A tattoo artist. It's like you get the feeling he's just hanging around these movie sets. And we're like, hey, put me in, coach.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the dude had a contract with Warner Brothers, Lethal Weapons, Warner Brothers property.
Right.
So I'm sure that was some part of contract fulfillment because I can't see that being a buddy thing. That Mel Gibson was good buddies with Robin Williams and Billy Crystal.
Yeah.
I don't think he's ever done a fucking movie with them
before.
Aren't
they both Jewish, too?
Yeah, right? He hates them.
I was going to say.
What the fuck?
No love lost. So that was odd.
Yeah.
Actually, let's go back to Sugar Ray, too, because I'm surprised that Mark McGrath, that's the guy's
They're
going
to love this. Sugar Ray's going to fucking tag the fuck out of this,
this
podcast.
This is the most
they've been mentioned in 20 years.
Except it's not in a good light. So it's like his... all right, so Scotty, the son, is 17 years old, we learn, right?
Shut the door, baby. Don't say a word. Please go ahead.
So we can only assume the girlfriend is about the same age,
about
right?
the same 17. Age.
So Mark McGrath from Sugar Ray is shacking up with a
17-year-old girl.
Not only making out with, like, I can see, you know, pulling the, who did we talk about the other day? That got caught with Twittering.
James Franco.
James Franco. I could see him pulling a James Franco. Some hot chick shows up at a concert, and he's like, all right, it's a one-night thing. He's taking her across country. Like she's a groupie.
She's a groupie. He's not taking her anywhere.
Okay,
she's following the band, but
he's openly holding
going.
Her hand around these concerts. If you're fucking Mark McGrath at the top of your fame, in public, you know, you're not holding hands with anybody,
yeah.
Let alone a 17-year-old, 8 and a half.
Yeah. No, I agree with you, man.
All right.
I don't know where else I can go with that.
Well, there you go.
I absolutely agree
with you. As long
as you
just
I think they tried to gloss over that as much as possible. Maybe that's why she was driving the motorcycle, because she was older.
All right.
Maybe.
But still 18.
Maybe. Yeah, well, 18, at least
it's
that's
legal.
I don't know. 17 might be legal in California. I have no idea.
Hey, man,
I don't know
Hawaii
what the,
is 16.
I don't know what the laws are. Why do you know?
Just saying.
Why the fuck do you know?
I've never been to Hawaii. I'm just saying.
But I'm planning my trip.
A little piece is of trivia. Right? No. Oh, my God.
Why are you oh my God-ing me? You're the one that just pulled out of nowhere that you knew that Hawaii was 16.
It's a piece of trivia.
Where did you learn it?
It's just one of those things.
Why do you know
it's common
this?
Knowledge.
Can we talk about this movie some more?
Please. Anything to get off this topic.
So they,
feeling uncomfortable.
So they have this kid, and at no time do these two men decide, like, hey, let me call your mom so you can talk to her.
No.
So that way you know we're not a couple of fucking raving perverts.
There is one point, after they finally get him, after the concert where he's passed out in the back seat, they call her.
No, they call her, but at no time after he wakes up, they're not like, hey, let's call your mom so you can talk to her.
Yeah.
So you know we're not crazy fucking people, you know, so that way we could all be responsible adults and you could say, Scott, please just hang tight. Bruce Greenwood's on his fucking way. Bob, I think, was his name.
Yep.
He's on his way. You know, just a little bit of fucking voice of reason. You know, and now look at me. I'm trying to get voice of reason from the fucking villain of the movie, quite honestly.
Yeah.
And no, I mean, it's just, it was overcomplicated from the word go. They took every situation that's really got an easy fix. It's almost like that romantic comedy situation where the reason why there's just any kind of conflict in romantic comedies is because nobody fucking talks to each other.
Yeah, they could have cleared this up with a conversation. It would have been a one-act play and everybody lives happily ever after.
Right?
But yeah.
Immediately, like you said earlier, police should have been called.
After
2 days,
yeah.
Police should have been fucking called.
I want police called on her. I'm like with you. Like, I'm pretty sure she's breaking some laws there.
Negligent fucking parents.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I absolutely agree. I think there is some kind of, not even waiting 17 years to let someone know that they're the parent. I don't think that, but I think trying to coerce somebody to go look for your son under false pretenses, that's fucked up. And it's a good thing her son like got her off the fucking hook on that.
That's true. Yeah, as I was watching this, you know, I know we talked about this. This movie's called Father's Day, which, much in the same way that Labor's Day was named Labor's Day, I have a feeling we're running out of holidays, And I think a lot of these movies are titled this way just so that every year they've got a guaranteed like cable run.
Yeah.
Like Groundhog's Day, you know every year it's going to be shown on some channel. But now, I'm not going to compare.
Groundhog Day is a fucking fantastic
Groundhog's
film.
Day is a masterpiece, and that, you know, they got lucky. But every year they're showing it on Groundhog's Day.
Yeah.
And so I have a feeling that, you know, this movie, hell, Independence Day, which we're going to talk about soon.
Yeah.
You know that if you make a movie called Independence Day, it's going to be shown every
year
somewhere, whether your movie's shit or good.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I did that right.
Yeah.
So
you did a good job.
This is called Father's Day, but I don't know that it should be called okay, there's a whole father's theme going on, but it doesn't take place in a day.
And it doesn't take place it isn't about Father's
on
Day.
On Father's Day.
No.
It's not even really so I take umbrage with the naming of it, Father's Day.
Gotcha.
What this movie really should have been titled was Mommy's a Slut and Daddy Doesn't Love You. That's the theme of this movie.
Mommy's a liar and Daddy doesn't love you.
Okay.
Because she's not a slut. I mean, dated people 17 years ago. I don't think she's a slut because
she's
a liar
right.
because she tries to coerce other people.
I don't want
to
slut
to
shame.
Her.
You're right.
We don't need to do slut.
But,
you need to watch the sexism.
Well, here's
there, Joel.
No, okay, but I'm going to take it.
You're a little bit of
here's what I'll say. She tells three different men.
Pig.
She tells three different men.
Misogynist
that,
motherfucker.
Motherfucker. She tells three different men that they may not be the father of their child, that it could be. And we find
she only tells two. She tells two people. She came immediately clean to Bruce Greenwood and was like, no, he is your son. I told these guys that it might be there so they can go look
for
him.
But still, it's common knowledge that three guys banged this chick within the same couple of month period where this child could all be theirs.
Right.
And that they're
according
they're
to,
face
according
value.
To her.
Okay, but like nobody questions it. Billy Crystal starts to question it, but he does the math. At least to the year,
yeah,
not to the month, and realizes, 17 years ago I banged her. Robin Williams does the same thing.
He biked through the fucking wine country.
I'm just saying, have you banged it three different chicks within the same year?
No.
All right, there you go.
Jesus. Are you kidding me? Have you met me?
We're getting personal.
There's no way I have that kind of game.
Oh, come on, you're handsome. I've seen you with the ladies.
Thank you.
You have a harem following you around.
No, that's the hair. It's my hair.
Oh, my bad.
All right, so...
Sorry.
No, go ahead. Please go ahead.
I'm totally going to change topics.
Go ahead. Change gears.
You know, we talked a lot about Sugar Ray. He's all over this movie, and so
Ray is a group.
Whatever. Sugar Ray is one man. We all know it.
It's just Mark McGrath.
Name another member of
Super
the band.
Supercat.
Name a second member. Jeff, I don't need you. Don't enforce it. Okay. Can you name a third?
No.
All right, but yeah, that was pretty impressive that you were able to name two. Obviously a Sugar Ray fan.
I was at one point.
Yeah. Well, you also work for a radio station.
Yes.
You probably had to know that.
This is good. Thank you. Thank you for completely blowing apart my victory there.
No, I'm just saying.
You work for a radio station, so that's why.
Much in the same way that I know
the
legal age in Hawaii is 16. This is a piece of knowledge that you've acquired through your
career. I think I prefer the Sugar Ray knowledge.
Yeah, you're probably in better standing.
So let's go on to what you were
going to say. So a lot of Sugar Ray music, but also, Joe, a lot of ska music.
A lot of ska. Ska was big then. This was 97.
It was
No
big.
Doubt was really blowing up.
And who else
the
did
Boss
we say?
Tones.
Boss Tones, Mighty Mighty Boss Tones.
Uh-huh. In fact, you hear the same Boss Tones song twice within like 10 minutes.
Why did they do that?
Because it was the most popular ska song in the country at that time.
I did love that song, but listening to this movie, like if you showed this movie to, a child today and say, hey, this this came out in 1997, they would think that 90% of the music that was getting airplay was ska music. It was all
because
over.
Because it was.
No, I don't think
at
so.
At the time, Joel, at the time it was.
There was a
We're
lot
talking about
of...
when I started in radio, I'm fucking telling you, 90% of pop music at the time had a ska influence.
There's no hip-hop? There's no...
There's Man, music works in cycles.
Okay.
And what was going on at that time, and what's really funny about that is we were just coming out of kind of a hair metal kind of rock phase.
Yeah, that's what
we were
remember.
Just coming out of that, and people were getting kind of sick of that. We were
grunge.
We were getting back into grunge led us back to like a hair metal phase because that's when like right after like Nirvana hit, and then we started getting that Seattle scene going again, and that's kind of when like Metallica was bringing it back, and even Megadeth was starting to get big again, and then we started kind of mellowing out. People were getting sick of that, we started getting some of the pop music. That's when we got a little bit of boy band action going again.
Oh,
and then
yeah.
immediately that was cut off by some ska stuff. That was cut off by No Doubt was huge. Once No Doubt hit the scene, they were fucking gigantic. And we had a little bit of Bush going on, if we want to talk about Mr. Gwen Stefani.
Yeah. nicely done.
And, so things kind of lightened up a little bit. Well, they were starting to kind of go everything was starting to go pop again. And metal was starting to get on the rise. Like, rock was really going to hit.
Yeah.
And then we had 9/11. And 9/11 cut the rock thing short. And then suddenly we went into, like, Britney, boy bands, yes. Pop. Like, that became fucking huge because that's what people wanted to, like, focus on. I'm going beyond.
That's 2001, and this was 1997, and you're talking about, like, you know, rock bands Bush and Blind Melon and that kind of indie rock or whatever. Uh-huh. I kind of feel like that was in full force in 1997 when this came. I graduated in 1996.
I graduated at the same time.
All right. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And then I did a little time in New York and then down in Austin, but then
like
around 97. No.
Just did a little time.
I occupied various administrative facilities. But then I came back, and it was the tail end of 97 the mid 98 when I started working in radio. I got into radio right after the law firm. And that's kind of that was the music that we were doing. You know, we were seeing the beginning of Matchbox 20.
That's right.
You know, when fucking Matchbox 20's push is like the fresh hot thing, you know, that kind of speaks volumes to like the intensity of your music at the time.
Yeah. All right, good call.
So no, the music in this movie, the music I think is represented quite fairly.
All right.
That's what you're going to expect. That's what you're going to hear, especially in L.A. The L.A. scene, especially what you're going to be hearing.
And maybe because this is so California-centric, they really just do like a Pacific Coast Highway tour in this movie from San Francisco to L.A. All right, I'll give you that. But in South Texas in 1997, I can guarantee you ska was not... I mean, like, I was a fan of it, and
huge here. What was our version of ska... was we were starting to get like Big Bad Voodoo Daddy, the Cherry Popping Daddies.
Yeah,
we were getting a lot of that here. Resurgence. A lot of the influence from swing and stuff like that was hitting here at that time.
Yeah. Razzie Awards.
I think I read that Julia Louis-Dreyfus was nominated for one.
Unfair, I think.
I think so too.
She's not. There are a ton of people who could have been nominated for Razzie Awards.
Robin Williams should have fucking ran away with it on this movie.
Halfway through this movie, I wish he would have committed suicide at the beginning in that first scene. Like, this would have been a completely different movie if he would have just pulled the trigger, would have been Billy Crystal all the way, and maybe somewhat watchable.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. He's painful to watch.
I mean, and I know the whole thing about this movie is that it rests on the shoulders of. It needs to be this confusion of who's the father. Mm-hmm. There's that whole question of who is the dad that I feel like
who is your daddy and what does he do?
Another Ivan Reitman movie. that whole theme, though, it's very weak and rests on the shoulders of, like you said, two actors that don't have a whole lot of fucking chemistry with each other as they're going through this, which is very surprising because of all the comic relief stuff.
Their history.
But that's with comic relief. It's unscripted. They get to just freak out, do whatever. Whatever. We're trademarking that. Mark that down. Like, the thing about if you go back and watch some of those old comic reliefs, you could even see people getting annoyed, like Whoopi, Billy. You could see them getting annoyed with Robin Williams.
Yes.
That motherfucker was coked out of his fucking mind, like all the time.
Every time I think I interrupt you too much in a podcast and maybe I'm stepping on your lines, and then I see Robin Williams, I'm like, oh no, that's how it's done. That's how it's done, right? I'm feeling pretty good about myself.
You're doing just fine, sir. So there's a point in this movie, which also known as the very end, where... they drop the fucking kid off at the house, and they've had their resolution, and the kid decides he tells both Robin Williams and Billy Crystal independently, like, no, my mom told me who my father was. It's you. And, you know, it's sold off as like, oh, wow, what a sweet thing. He didn't want them to feel bad.
Yeah.
I kind of felt like that's just as criminal.
No, of course.
As Natasha Kinski and her story at the beginning.
Acorn doesn't fall far from the tree,
does it? These guys deserve to know they're not the fucking father of this kid.
Still toying with their emotions. It shows you that the child hasn't learned anything. Scott hasn't learned anything throughout this debacle.
Yeah. If you want to see him learn something, or if you want to see him give something back to these characters, you need to do something else. This is not the way to do it. This was a very weak resolution to this movie. But getting even beyond that, and we can come back and revisit that in a second, but they drop the kid off, and then, like, they leave. That's when the movie should have fucking ended. But then they pull up to like Billy Crystal's house, and I even wrote down that I'm like, Jesus, there's still more movie.
Why is this movie still going?
Why is this still happening? And then they try so hard to shoehorn in this like lesson learned between Billy Crystal and Robin Williams. This like this mutual respect that they found with each other.
Yeah. This was the Planes, Trains, and Automobiles moment.
It was, Do you want to come in and have dinner with us?
Exactly.
This was totally that moment. I'll let you borrow my fucking car. This was unnecessary. It was absolutely unnecessary. No one cares about this resolution between these characters. And the thing is, you don't take the steps necessary to get to this point at all. Throughout this movie, we never took any steps to get us to this point.
Yeah.
There was never a moment, unless you want to count when they're at the concert and like Billy Crystal and Robin Williams are headbutting everybody to try to save the kid. But even that is really fucking weak.
Yeah, I think so too. The closest we got to that is the scene where they're kind of fighting over, you know, when they first get the unconscious Scott. By the way, what the fuck was that kid doing where he was unconscious for like 24 hours?
I have no idea.
They're throwing him over his shoulder. They pull him out of a concert, a Sugar Ray concert. The next thing you know is he wakes up in a hotel room wearing a robe. Like, that is some criminal activity.
Yes.
And he stays unconscious throughout the entire thing.
That's why I maintain that like going back to a hotel was the wrong fucking thing.
Yeah,
like that honestly was the wrong thing.
So
maybe
like,
going to the PD or driving him straight back to fucking his house.
Yeah, there you go.
Like that is the road trip. And that probably would have been a lot more of an interesting movie instead of shoehorning in this drama about him and a girl that he likes or him and Sugar Ray or the drug dealers that he stole money from.
Oh my God.
We didn't need any of that. We could have had almost like the movie Dutch. We could have had like the hijinks that ensue as they're trying to get this kid back home to his mother.
Yeah. Speaking of that, going back to the drug dealers, I can't remember for the life of me what happened.
This is just I cannot remember.
This is a 1997 music episode. We should just call it that and not Father's Day. Maybe people will listen more. But the $5,000, what happened? How was that resolved? Like, they beat up the drug dealers.
That's it.
He headbutts them.
That's it. And the cops arrest the drug dealers at the concert.
But
did you notice that? Like, cops just showed up out of nowhere?
Yeah. So basically, Scott gets away with stealing $5,000 of somebody else's money, buying it for this whore of a girlfriend, losing it, and then in the end, this kid learns nothing throughout this entire movie.
He earns nothing.
Yes.
He learns nothing. I was really upset with the resolution with the girlfriend that the guys were like, tell him what everybody else already knows. She's like, you got boring and blah, 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 blah. Like, that's kind of shitty. Like, it was shitty to let her say those things to him.
Yeah.
Like,
it's probably not how it would have played out in reality.
This movie was missing comeuppance for the kid in that respect.
Mm-hmm.
There should have been, instead of punishing Bruce Greenwood this entire movie, this girl should have had some kind of, you know, something happen.
The mother.
So that way we get a little even out. The mother should have had something happen. And I'm not saying, like, I need cruelty towards these women.
No, but there needs to be something where they learn from what they did.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they at no time do. And she's still got this thing, this collar around her neck. You know, there could have been a very interesting plot there where they could have maybe tricked the drug dealers into going after Mark McGrath.
There you go.
How funny that like these drug dealers beat up Sugar Ray to get this fucking necklace off this girl's neck. Like that would have been kind of funny, but then we can't reward drug dealers in a movie like this
because
this is a family
movie.
It's
the 90s.
It's a family comedy with guns in people's mouths.
It's not Breaking Bad.
How about when Jared Harris just pulls a fucking gun on the Vegas Strip?
Yeah, and like nobody stops. There's no cops. He's brandishing it wildly.
Do you know? Like, no, wait. It's not Vegas. It's Reno.
They're in Reno.
But still, it's fucking casinos that line this fucking strip of road. There is all kinds of fucking cops.
Absolutely.
There's when there's money involved, there's casino, there's gambling, there are fucking authorities. And this dude pulls a fucking gun out in the middle of the street and is about to shoot this kid in a car.
Yeah.
There should have been something. There should have been some kind of an acknowledgement from some kind of authority figure at that moment. But because Ivan Reitman has no fucking vision. He doesn't think of the long game at all in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
All he's thinking of is like a step ahead. That's what you're getting from this. You're not you were finding out that all those little details are falling by the wayside because he's not focusing on the right things in the story.
And I would forgive that if we were introduced to some laughs throughout the way. Like, oh, okay,
no,
I'll forgive this movie for having a subplot or you know, loosely tied together. If at least you know there are
at least
few
it's
chuckles.
Funny.
I don't know about you, Joe. I didn't laugh. I'm trying to think if I laughed at all throughout this movie.
I laughed like I think two or three times in this movie. There was like a huh. Yeah. That's pretty much what it got for me.
Yeah.
When she said they're with Sugar Ray and Billy Crystal says the boxer.
Oh yeah.
I laughed at that.
Yeah.
I laughed at the end when Bruce Greenwood was finally driven home. And like the tow truck driver guy's like, well, I'll give you a call.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, you got my number. I laughed at that. I was like, that's funny. That's kind of weird.
Yeah.
But the thing was, I never laughed, I don't think, at what I was supposed to laugh at.
Right.
Robin Williams being wacky and like a fucking sonic boom running around this goddamn movie. I didn't laugh at him once.
Yeah.
And I think the more he tried to make me laugh, the less I wanted to.
Yeah, Robin Williams at his worst, really.
I laughed more at Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Yeah.
I thought that she was funny.
Her reactions.
Just her reactions, her exchange with the girl at the airport.
Yeah. And again, Billy Crystal playing the straight man, I don't think he's made for that. He has to be the guy like cracking wise.
Yeah.
And he wasn't allowed to do that because that was supposed to be Robin Williams' role. Mm. And neither of them were up to their respective roles, unfortunately.
Yeah. No, and they introduced so many weird things in this movie where like Robin Williams has like this dementia where while he's driving, he sometimes thinks he's run somebody over.
What was the point of that?
I don't know. And I don't think they ever paid it back. Was that some kind of setup for when they hit Scott? And then Robin Williams is like, wow, that's nothing like I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, but that's not even a very funny joke.
No.
Again, kind of morbid, along with having the gun in the mouth.
Uh-huh.
And so, yeah, why go through the trouble to set that up twice?
Yeah.
Two unfunny scenes for one, not funny scene either.
And that's kind of spot on.
That's the definition of this movie.
With this movie, you know, there's so much setup and so little payoff.
It also does one of my sins, movie sins, where they just break out into a dance for no reason. You remember that?
Yeah.
I complained about it a couple of years. Jeff again with his head in his palms. Complaining about it with, what was the J-Lo movie we did a couple of years ago?
Made in Manhattan.
Made in Manhattan with I call them waitresses again. That's the maids are like dancing to nothing, by the way.
Yeah,
no music playing on the set. And here we get Robin Williams and Billy Crystal for no reason.
They start dancing to Sly and the Family Stone.
Yeah. And he's like, come on. And
Funky Chicken.
But unnecessary.
It's totally unnecessary.
It's the biggest pry when you have nothing else to offer and you're like, well, people like seeing people dance funny, so just dance funny.
And
maybe that'll work.
It's such a weak cop-out to make the kids start relating to these two guys.
Yeah.
It's the weakest cop-out in the world. Like, you could have actually had, like, a moment, a genuine moment between these people, but the problem is you've got one guy who's playing a role that he shouldn't be playing. You've got one guy who can't fucking focus, so he's like a fucking Ritalin kid on the set.
Yeah.
And then you've got a kid that's really kind of a shitty actor. So you really you couldn't do anything with him anyway to try to help him connect.
Although little Mad Men Ty, that kid went on to have a sizable role, or at least for a season there, in Mad Men. I think that was season 3 or 4.
I bet it was Jared Harris that called up and was like, I did this movie with a young boy, and Ivan Reitman directed it. We should bring him onto the set.
You might be right. You know, now that you mention it, I wonder if they had any scenes together. I don't think they did.
In Mad Men?
No.
That would have been awesome if he owed Jared Harris's character $5,000. You owe me $5,000. all right. So is there anything else that you want to touch on with this flick?
I think we have covered it all.
Did we cover everything? Joel, what was the budget on this movie?
The budget was $85 million budget.
What? $85 million?
Huge budget for even for 1997. That's
for a buddy road comedy.
Exactly. Well, you got to, you know, they're paying their salaries. Billy Crystal.
Wait, but how much could they possibly make? How much of a salary can Billy Crystal pull down in 97? Because now we're talking 97. We are past City Slickers.
We're past City Slickers.
We're past
too.
That. And that's where he was at his peak. The City Slickers thing was, I think if you go back and look at Billy Crystal's film work, City Slickers was the pinnacle.
Deservedly,
and then it went downhill after that. No, it's a great film.
Yeah.
Robin Williams. A Doubtfire.
I mean,
that's the pinnacle of his
fire,
and like Aladdin,
I was
his
say,
voice work.
That was the same year, but that doesn't equal.
No, it doesn't.
$5 million.
So where
salary?
What kind of salary do you think that they were pulling down? Like, just if you were to guess.
I mean, even if I 5 million sounds high, really, for both of them, right?
Right.
To do this movie with Ivan Reitman.
So let's say they got $5 million each.
All right. So now we're down to $75 million.
$75 million went to what? In
Ivan
this
Reitman
movie?
Maybe gets another chunk of that, but then I know.
So now 65 million. Let's say that we got 65 million.
I'll say 50% of it went to California taxes since they shot this in California.
Yeah.
100%. So
this is
maybe
insane.
Sugar Ray got another couple mil.
That is insane. Sugar Ray wasn't really huge then.
No, that's right. Yeah, they were up and coming. That's
so
right.
You would think that they would just, oh, you know, hey, we're part of this, you know, we're part of this flick. Man, I got, and they were probably on, you know what, if we go back and look, I don't know if you could check this out, Jeff, if Sugar Ray was on Warner Brothers' label.
Oh, they probably were. So they, oh, yeah, because you don't choose a band to be in your movie.
No.
Unless
I'm sure they weren't written
cheap.
Into the script, like that the writers.
Of course
these
not.
Two guys
of
that
course.
Wrote Happy Day scripts were like, we like this band, Sugar Ray. So I am fucking astounded at how much of a budget this movie had. How much did it make?
Well, $35
million. Whoa!
So no matter where the money went, it certainly did not come back to Warner Brothers.
Holy shit.
So not even half. And yeah, I think that's international over the life of that movie. Uh-oh.
They're on Atlantic Records.
Atlantic
Records. Right. Interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting.
All right. Well, but still.
I wonder if there's like if they were a subsidiary of Warner Brothers or not.
Yep.
They are. Yep. Thank you. Thank you.
Distributor.
It all comes together now, folks. There you go.
Yeah,
so as long as we're talking numbers here, you want to take a guess as far as Rotten Tomatoes?
I know. I looked these
okay.
up. Yeah.
All right. Well, then 19% of critics on Rotten Tomatoes, and audiences were right up there with them with 25%.
IMDb gave it 5 out of 10.
It's surprising to me. Yeah. I don't know where they get off doing lower. That. That's why I don't believe their ratings, and I stick with the Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, no, that's probably the safe way to go.
Yeah.
Joel, what did this movie do right?
Wow, that is a tough one.
Yeah, it is. This is a really tough question. You know what? No, this will be part of it. It will be part of it. So what did the movie? What do you think the movie did right?
I railed on it a little bit earlier. I didn't necessarily rail on it. I just called it out that there's a lot of ska music in this movie. But got to be honest, it brought me back. Big fan of the ska.
The nostalgia factor is what it did right.
Hell yes, man. I'll even throw
it. It didn't do that on purpose, though, Joel.
No. Well, no. You think they made this movie thinking 20 years from now, Joel Burnson was going to sit down and watch it on Netflix?
And go, wow, this reminds me of old school Edge.
Somebody made some good calls back then as far as soundtrack goes. No, but even though they played that one Mighty Mighty Boston song twice, I'll listen to it twice. I'll listen to it three times. Hell.
There you go.
So I like the music in this movie.
And what did it do wrong?
Everything else. No, I know that's a wide net.
It's such a stock answer, too, at this point.
You know, if you got to pick one thing, and you made it crystal clear, Billy Crystal Clear. No,
I'm
sorry.
Fucking mashing my head against the table right now.
It's Billy Crystal in the sense that he can't play the straight guy. He can't play that role. He kind of looked like he was sleepwalking through this a bit, understandably so. When you've got Robin Williams, you need somebody to play against.
Yeah.
And I don't think he was there for them. I mean, not that really anybody can say Robin Williams. Like you said, he's a train going 80 miles per hour. You either got to get on out of his way or at least lay track
down for him.
Well, the
really weird thing about Robin Williams is that you see a movie like this, and this is kind of indicative to most of Robin Williams' film career. But then you see stuff like One Hour Photo.
Oh, I love his dramatic roles.
Really fucking good. I don't
he's
like
a
What
good
Dreams.
Actor.
I'm not a big What Dreams May Come fan.
No, me neither.
I thought that movie was kind of forced down people's throats, and it was a little too artsy. But I really loved the understated performance in One Hour Photo.
That and Good Will Hunting.
Good Will Hunting was really good. Let's go back even further. Yeah, to Dead Poets Society.
He's
fantastic.
A great dramatic actor.
But in Dead Poets Society, I'll maintain that he's still got a little bit of that cocaine energy going on in Dead Poets Society.
Well, of course, because it came out in like 87.
Yes.
It was fucking high on coke.
A fantastic script. I think that they benefit more in that movie. They benefit more from a fantastic script and even a more well-rounded cast of support characters going on. The actors in that movie were amazing. Young Ethan Hawke.
Yeah.
And I like to go back to One Hour Photo. Wasn't he in the movie Insomnia? Wasn't he in the remake of Insomnia with Al Pacino?
He's the villain in Insomnia as well.
Fantastic job in that as well.
So basically you like him when he plays a
bad guy. Yeah, I like him when he's able to just fucking turn it off for a little bit and just be a fucking dude and play things a little bit darker. I'm okay with that. I didn't mean to interrupt your flow there.
No, that was it. No, well, I feel like I'm parlaying from my Billy Crystal into your Robin Williams. What you would say the worst thing about this movie is?
I would say that the worst thing about this movie is Robin Williams. I think the worst thing about this is letting Robin Williams do what he wanted to do on the set. You need to fucking wrangle that guy, especially with a project like this. You need to wrangle him. I think the thing that this movie did the worst officially just ultimately falls on the shoulders of Ivan Reitman.
Yes.
He failed when it came to this movie.
Autopilot.
He should have been so much better than he was at this point. You know, the guy's given us Ghostbusters. He's given us Caddyshack, Stripes, Dave, Kindergarten Cop.
I'll give you that.
I love that movie, too. You know, and I know that's when he started going into, like, more clean family fun kind of stuff. This movie is upsetting. Someone like Ivan Reitman should have been able to spot the problem points and stop it. And if it's something like that he couldn't control Robin Williams, then you find some way to do it. Sure. You find someone who can do it. And Billy Crystal, maybe they thought at the time was an obvious choice because he's dealt with him with comic relief. Mm-hmm. But I also agree. I think Billy Crystal, I'm not quite down on his performance as you are in this movie.
Yeah.
I think that he does a serviceable job, but I think that you could have done better with him, especially to have him be a physical force, an attorney who basically harms people physically in the course of this movie.
Yeah.
Who should understand the ramifications of that. But that's a story problem. But no, I will put this firmly on the shoulders of Ivan Reitman. He fucked up.
Yeah. This movie is for nobody.
He should have known, like right off the bat, he should have like read the script. Ooh, this is a weak remake. Because this was originally a French film.
Right.
With Gerard Depardieu. And he should have went, wow, this adaptation sucks. This is really rough. We are having a whole bunch of problems. This was a bad outing from Ivan Reitman, and that's pretty much all that you could say about it.
I'm telling you, it's not funny. It doesn't check that box.
No,
it's not a family movie.
It's not a family movie.
No.
It just kind of belongs in its own little place where you could pour gasoline on it and set it on fire.
Exactly. And as we mentioned, like ultimately, the people you want to have some comeuppance at the end don't get
they
it.
They don't, no.
And nobody really learns anything. Uh-uh. So it's like, why did we go through this exercise?
What I liked most about this movie, I don't know if I could say what it did the best. What I liked most about this movie was a couple of the supporting characters.
Mel Gibson.
I liked Bruce Greenwood.
Yeah, he's so likable.
I liked him, and I would have liked to have followed his character a little bit more.
Yeah.
If we're going to be seeing him like go through these trials and tribulations to get to his son, let him earn that goal. Mm-hmm. Let him finally achieve getting to his son and not his son getting to him.
Yeah.
You know, have him go through that for a reason. Homer's Odyssey. Mm-hmm. Let him go through these trials and tribulations and finally appreciate his son. Let his son see what he's been through and appreciate his father.
Yeah, that doesn't happen.
That doesn't happen at all. I like Julia Louis-Dreyfus. And you know, I have this weird thing about her. Like, I find her so incredibly attractive.
I was just
going to
say, she's
way
probably more attractive in this movie
than
any
I've
episode
ever
of
seen
Seinfeld.
Yes.
I don't know what it was. I think maybe but she wasn't playing to the back row, to use a theater term.
Yeah.
Like, you know, in Seinfeld, everything's big. And she's got to keep up with Kramer, Richard, what's his name?
yes,
Richard,
Kramer.
Richard, whatever, Kramer.
Michael Richards.
Michael Richards, thank you. And this is an opportunity where she can just... She can kind of play the straight man,
but her reactions where she reacts, but
yeah, and then
she
that
is
sweet
for the most
moment,
where she's understated.
That
and,
sweet scene with her and Billy Crystal,
and
where it's
so nicely played out, where you think she's going to go one way with it, and she doesn't. She completely turns it over on him a little bit, and surprises him with, "I want to have kids with you, and I'm just upset that you would give up on this boy, because it makes me think maybe you would give up on our kid."
On ours, yeah.
That's such a poignant and like and fitting moment in the movie. The only time in this movie where any kind of lesson is learned, where anything is actually imparted, any wisdom is doled out, and it's from her character, and she does it in a skillful way. And like I said, she looks really good. She looks really good in this movie.
I don't know why.
And I was expecting... Once they introduced her as his wife, I was totally expecting the bitch turn.
Me too.
And
because she's played that before.
Yes.
I guess I'm thinking of what's the National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, where she can kind of play
where she's
that.
The neighbor.
The neighbor, yeah. Yes. And it's like all the horrible things happen to her, but she's kind of a bitch. You kind of don't mind it.
Right.
But yeah, undeserved of that Razzie nomination.
I agree. I was pleasantly surprised by her. Mm-hmm. So if we were going to remake this movie.
Okay.
I
think you recast a few more characters than I did.
I think I did, yeah.
All right.
I think I recasted. Do you want me to go first, and I'll just run through it, or do you want to go back and forth?
I think...
We've never actually settled on
a way
to do this.
Well, because it depends on the movie and the type of... Like, a lot of times the casting is tied in, and I do have my two main leads are kind of a duo. Do you have a duo for your...
I do, yeah.
All right. Let's save them for last, then.
Okay. I'll work the way up. For me, the rest of the casting kind of hinges on that.
Then let's do that first.
I think it'll still be a surprise. I think it'll still work. So we'll save the best for last.
Okay.
All right. So
wait. Hold on. No. Back up. Because mine kind of does too. So let's do the leads first.
You want to do the leads
let's
first?
Do the leads first.
God damn it. Okay.
We should really work this out ahead of time.
We should, but I think this is kind of funny for people to hear us like have our meltdowns.
Yeah. Either that, or we'll cut it out. Jeff is shaking his head no.
All right.
Who's your leads?
My leads. Mm-hmm. I wanted to bring it back, and which is funny because I'm not really the biggest fan of this guy. I've only liked a few things that he's done. I kind of think that he's played out. But I still feel like these two have an insane amount of chemistry, and it would be funny to see them play through this whole scenario. I went with Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly.
Oh, dude, of course.
To bring the stepbrothers back.
Why not?
Will Ferrell as the Billy Crystal character.
Oh, interesting.
To see him kind of play more the straight-laced guy.
I thought you would have gone the other.
And see, that's what I think is a little more typical. And John C. Reilly is Dale.
Playing against type.
Uh-huh.
I dig that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
I think that they would work well with each other. Do you want me to go through the rest of it? Or you might as well. All right. So playing the role of Colette, who was the mother.
The real mother.
I went with Mira Sorvino.
Okay, I could see that. Very nice.
Scott.
Yeah, she's about the right age.
I think she's the right
age. That
was
my challenge, is finding people old enough who they could have had a 17-year-old kid.
Yeah. With the character Scott, the son,
mm-hmm.
a little movie came out last year called The Way, Way Back.
Yes.
I went with Liam James.
That guy's fantastic.
Yeah, the guy who plays Duncan.
Yeah.
Oh,
and he could play kind of the despondent teenager.
And because Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly... you know, they look a little bit older, like Robin Williams and
Billy Crystal.
So I think Liam would fit with them pretty well.
Yeah, nicely done.
Carrie, Billy Crystal's current wife, the Julia Louis-Dreyfus role.
Yeah.
I went with Jenna Fisher from The Office, Pam.
Ooh, nice. Oh, that's a good pairing, the two of them.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I like that.
I agree.
Have they been in a movie before?
John C. Reilly and Jenna Fisher were in Walk Hard.
Okay. Oh, well, I guess The Office.
Yeah, that's right. Will Ferrell was in The Office for a little bit.
Okay, I like it.
Her husband, Colette's husband, Bob, the Bruce Greenwood character, Will Forte. And put the mustache on him.
Yeah, you got to have the mustache.
Absolutely. And the thing is about Will Forte, he's an amazing physical comedian.
Yeah.
So seeing those things happen to him, he would be able to play them off. I would almost say probably funnier than Bruce Greenwood. Although Bruce Greenwood, I think, did an honorable job at what he had to do.
Yeah.
But I think Will Forte would.
He's in a porta potty for 30% of his scenes.
Yes.
So really, what do you have to do?
This is true. And I also cast the drug dealers.
Oh, okay. See, I didn't
Lee
that.
And Matt.
Uh-huh.
And I cast the Flight of the Conchords guys.
Yes.
Jermaine and Brett as the drug dealers.
That'd be hilarious.
And it would be directed by Jon Favreau.
Ooh.
Because I would like
nice.
To see a little return, like a reunion of Elf.
Oh, very good. All right. Well, I'm going to start with mine then.
Okay.
Again, it all hinges on the duo. You need two people who have a career together, who got their comedic timing down, can kind of be the yin to the other person's yang.
Yes, I agree. Penny Marshall and
what is her name? Shit, Laverne and Shirley.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Oh, well. I was going more Lenny and Squiggy. actually, that'd be good.
That would be pretty funny.
Edward, what's his name? McKean?
Yeah.
But that is not who I chose. Instead, I chose... Jimmy Kimmel and Adam Carolla
yes.
of The Man Show.
Yes.
They both have a storied history together, and I've never really seen them play against each other. Like, they're always kind of on the same page. They're never really battling.
Uh-huh.
I think that'd be an interesting dynamic to kind of know that their comedic history have the same sensibilities,
uh-huh.
but have one in the one role and one in the other. I'm not sure that Adam Carolla would... I'd probably put Adam Carolla in the Robin Williams role. I don't know about the whole suicidal thing. No,
yeah.
you'd like him in the other one?
I would probably put him in Billy Crystal. You know what I like about what you've done here?
Oh.
Is you've taken,
oh, yes, Joe, please.
You've taken two staples of, like, L.A. culture. You've taken Adam Carolla, who has the huge podcast network out in L.A.
Right.
And now you've also got Jimmy Kimmel, who hosts The Tonight Show out in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's great.
Yeah.
If you still have it based in L.A., you've got
there
all
you go.
Your bases covered.
Yeah, we could actually remake this movie, couldn't
yes.
we?
Yes.
We shouldn't, but if we did, that's what I would do.
Who else do you have?
So for Colette, which is the mother whore back in the day who sired this child, I'm going to go Elizabeth Banks.
He's just such because. A misogynist
sorry, I'm just saying, listen.
What? He keeps
right.
saying words like slut and whore.
The fact that they can. That everybody just accepts without, even wondering. Oh, okay.
She lies to them. She's not having sex with everybody now.
I know.
It's
but
an unfair assessment. It's
but basically
very sexist.
What she's telling
it's
these
offensive.
People is, I fucked three different guys within a 6-month period. And they're all going like, oh, yep, okay, I could see that.
But
like
she...
they all accept it without questioning.
Okay.
All right, I'm just saying. All what right. does that say about her character?
I don't know, man.
Well, Elizabeth
she's
Banks.
She's not real. I don't know why I'm getting so worked up.
I know, you really are.
Elizabeth Banks is
Israel. And,
Israel.
I think you need somebody who has a little more comedic background. She showed her comedic chops before. I just rewatched Pitch Perfect. She has a small role in there.
Amazing.
But she's so funny.
Yes.
She's great. And so I think you need that in this role. In fact, you need comedians in every role in this movie,
uh-huh.
which is also why I cast Sarah Silverman in the Julie Louis-Dreyfus. So she would be the... oh gosh, I guess I'm playing a little off of reality, aren't I? Because yeah, she would be Jimmy Kimmel's wife when they dated for a while. So we know.
Or Adam Carolla's.
Or Adam Carolla's.
That would be weird.
I think you need Jimmy, and maybe it's just because I'm used to seeing Kimmel in a suit now, and so I picture him, oh, he could be the lawyer. He's a little more straight-laced. Adam Carolla's kind of the wild one, just kind of spouting off of the mouth. And for the Bruce Greenwood character, this is the actual father we learn later on. Again, you got to go with that mustache. That mustache is the role. That mustache plays this role. And in my recasting, that mustache is William H. Macy.
Oh, my God.
Because he does have a glorious mustache. And again, can't you see him?
With Elizabeth Banks?
Okay, well.
Wow.
But in a way that you would root for one of the other. Well, really, could you see any of these people with Elizabeth Banks?
No, I couldn't. But what I do like is that he's a very sympathetic kind of guy.
This is what I'm saying. I don't mind seeing him. I think he could play the sympathy, but also play the comedic side of that role, which is required. Oh, and also the loving side, you know, embracing his child when he finally reunites with him at the end of the
movie. It's almost like Jurassic Park 3.
What is this? Yeah,
it's almost exactly like Jurassic Park 3.
No kidding. And then as far as the director goes...
Wait a minute.
What?
This plot is exactly Jurassic Park 3.
Is it? Yeah,
where their son's gone missing and they lie to somebody to help them go find their kid.
Wow, yeah. So I should have recast Sam Neill.
You should have.
In the role of Billy Crystal.
Laura Dern.
Oh, see, that's what this movie needed. More dinosaurs.
With dinosaurs. I fucking agree, man. Dinosaurs, ninjas, and pizza.
Sugar Ray,
there's
you're
never
out.
A time those things are
Velociraptor,
bad.
Velociraptor, you're in. As far as the director goes, you need, again, somebody who knows how to handle comedy and direct comedians.
Uh-huh.
And so I went with, much in the same way that you went with Flight of the Conchords, I went with James Bobin. Is that how you say his name? Or Bobin? He's the director who did the Muppets movie and has worked with them in the past. Nobody knows him by name, but Google him. He's done a lot.
He did the first Muppet movie, or did he? Was it both?
I think he's, well, weren't they both directed by the same person?
I don't know if they were directed by the same person. Oh, there's definitely a different feel between the two.
See, I haven't seen the second one.
You're not missing much.
Don't dash my dreams.
It's not very good.
Oh, it's too bad. I love the Muppets.
It should have been straight to video.
Well, I'll catch it on video.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. I'm sure you're going to download it.
What are you talking about? Already. Listen, I pay to rent them from
Redbox.
I'm not
saying you're not paying for it. I'm saying, you know, you download stuff from iTunes.
That's true.
Right?
No, not at all.
All right. So is that all you've got for that?
That's all I've
got. Can we please fucking end this?
Yeah, this is like a long episode.
The nail in the... Long episode, a needlessly long episode for a movie that was way longer than it should have been.
But hey, happy Father's Day,
Happy Father's, happy late Father's Day. Stay away from this fucking
Celebrate
movie.
Celebrate by not watching
In
this.
Fact, I'm going to be giving away a copy of this movie on DVD.
This is somebody's prize.
I am, yes. I'm going to give away a copy of this movie. What I want to do, what do I want to do?
Joe, might I recommend that you...
I would like the someone to, on the Facebook page...
Okay.
I would love for someone to answer me this question.
Mm.
And
what is your favorite color?
I would like to know. I would like to know the dish that that Billy Crystal challenges the ice cream guys in City Slickers. There's these two guys. They're famous for being able to like match an ice cream with any meal. I want you to tell me what the meal is that Billy Crystal challenges the ice cream guys with.
That's elaborate.
Yeah. Well, you're going to have to work for this one.
Oh, nice.
So if you do that and then send us a PM or even just comment on our Facebook page, let me know what the answer is to that, and you could walk away with a copy of Father's Day on DVD because I don't want to fucking keep this thing.
You're going to have to
We'll sign it, too. Joel and I will sign it.
Hey, there you go. Signed copy. Actually, I'm sorry, Joe. My manager says I'm not allowed to sign. I'm pulling a Peter Mayhew.
Oh, God. All right. So if there's anything that you would like to add to this discussion about Father's Day, you can always go to the aforementioned Facebook page. Just go to Facebook, search bar, the editing bay, look for the girl with the bleeding eyes, and that's going to be us. And you can let us know what you think about this movie, what you think about what we had to say about it. If you have any thoughts of other movies that you like, we get suggestions all the time, and we swear we are working through these. But every once in a while, Joel and I just kind of go, oh, I kind of want to do this movie.
Yeah.
So, and it's our podcast, so we get to do it. But if there is something that you could think of that you'd like us to take a look at, just go ahead and let us know there. And they could also go to our website, right, Joe?
Yes, they can. They can go to www.editingbay.com. Not the editing bay, not edit bay, Editingbay.com.
I love that.
That is our website. I know. It's kind of become my little... I should make up t-shirts of that.
It's your I'll be back.
But I'll only make up those t-shirts when we sell out of the other ones, which are still available on our website. This is from the live show that we did a couple of months ago now.
Beginning of April.
These are collector's items now, and we've got a nice little... I should mention, I never talk about the quality of these t-shirts, but these just aren't like generic Hanes. Like these are like 50-50 cotton poly blend or something. They got a nice feel. Actually, I came over the other day, and Jeff was wearing one. My brother came over to my house the other day. He was wearing one.
Uh-huh.
It's like I see them everywhere now.
There you go.
They could just be wearing them when they're around me, kind of like when you're
make you feel
better. You put grandma's quilt out on the couch when she comes to visit, but then it goes in a closet the rest of the year. Could be one of those things, but I'm gonna take it as we're starting a movement here. So be a part of that movement. Go to the website and you get your own T-shirt for the Editing Bay.
Yes,
show your support,
sir. And while you're there on the website, you can also listen to all of our episodes of the podcast, previous episodes. We would love for you to download us off of iTunes as well, because we can track those numbers.
Yeah.
And we appreciate that very much. Thank you so much for supporting the show and for listening. Thank you, Jeff, for recording.
Yay.
I'm so sorry for this thing going a little bit later than usual. Joel, as always, it's a pleasure.
Thank you, sir.
We'll catch you guys next time.
Thanks, guys.
You've been listening to the Next Wave Radio Network.
That's fucking gold.